Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 124 with GORUCK founder Jason McCarthy.
And so, you know, we were sitting in one of her guest rooms at her house in Abidjan, and I was trying to figure out what to do next with my life. And we were there, and Emily said, "You should do the GORUCK thing." And so, you know, I don't think she knew what that meant, and she certainly didn't have the vision for what it's become. And I certainly didn't at that time either. But that was the sort of happy accident of, hey, I need something to do, and this could probably be it.
Well, first off, special thanks to Jared Weimer, Beyond the Uniform episode number 98, for making the recommendation to interview Jason. Extremely exhilarating interview today about the founding of a company that now does $15 million in annual revenue, selling rucksacks and hosting events and just all sorts of cool stuff. What I love about this interview is that Jason gives a really honest and raw view of entrepreneurship that, you know, if you're thinking of entrepreneurship or thinking of startups, I think it's a great perspective, and he's very straightforward. He also has an incredible story of how he's built this company up over the last 10 years while also staying true to his values, and also some great thoughts on work-life balance and following your passion. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Jason McCarthy. Joining me today in Jacksonville Beach, Florida, is the founder and CEO of GORUCK, Jason McCarthy. Jason, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff.
So I wanted to give listeners a quick background. Jason, he's the founder and CEO of GORUCK. It's a company he started about almost nearly 10 years ago now. It's a retail company that builds gear, they host events, they build teams and strengthen the community. And he started out at Emory University, after which he worked as an analyst at Milestone Merchant Partners before joining the Army, where he served for 5 years as a Special Forces Communication Sergeant. After the Army, he started GORUCK and has grown a team to over 30 people now, with 100 Special Forces cadre that lead their events. After those 5 years of service, how did you decide to approach that decision to move on?
So the decision to move on was an easy and a very, very difficult one. So I was married at the time, right? So at the time being kind of a a telling thing about what's about to happen in my life. And so my wife was in the State Department, and she was stationed in Cote d'Ivoire, which is West Africa. It's right next to Ghana. Mm. And she was in Abidjan, which is their sort of economic capital. And so, you know, she was in her training in D.C. and thereabouts for the entire time I was in the Special Forces Qualification Course at Fort Bragg. And, you know, it was a sort of long distance marriage. I was in Iraq while she was in West Africa. I mean, there's a lot of probably firsts in the history of the universe that we got to experience, which yep. I say that kind of with a smile now. But at the time, it was just sort of a bullet train, and we were both kind of trying to figure it out. But when they say you sort of grow apart, we just sort of were apart, right? Mm. And so, but we had naively hoped that we could skip to the end. And the end of what? The end of a marriage the end of a kind of separation geographically, and that we could just sort of all of a sudden show up at the end of 5 years of never living together, and it would just be sort of a fairy tale ending. And of course, that's kind of never the case. Yeah. So I got out to go be with her and live with her in West Africa. And my plan was to then apply to the State Department or one of those types of agencies and continue to serve America, because I felt that, you know, those to whom much is given, much is expected. And I felt like I had all of this great training, and I had all of these great sort of skills, and I was, you know, confident in them because of the guys that I'd served with and what they had taught me and what I'd learned serving by their side. And so I wanted to continue to put them to good use, to great use, in fact, for America. And so that was the plan, was to go back in, not necessarily to the military, probably State Department or something like that. And, you know, it just sort of derailed once the marriage started crashing and burning, and And that's just sort of, you don't always get to pick your path in life.
What was the genesis of Go Ruck? I mean, was this an idea you had toyed with, or on and off, or like, where did that idea come from?
So I'm a really accidental entrepreneur. I never had a lemonade stand as a kid. I don't really, I always wanted to go play sports and be around my friends and, work really hard and stuff. But I just was never really in it for like the businessman side. It's not really, doesn't come naturally to me. We'll just say that. And so this was born, Go Ruck was born of an accident. And the accident also was wrapped up into Emily and her time in West Africa. So, I'd been to Iraq. I did my combat tour there in 2007, at sort of the height of the surge, and went to the embassy and started building her a go bag or a go ruck, and put it in her car and said, "Hey, wherever you go, make sure this is there just in case." And sort of, just in case what was, well, they love a good coup in Africa. So you never know when you're going to find yourself sort of disabled, your vehicle's disabled, or, you need to flee, evacuate, which is the MO when stuff happens there. You don't want to stay and fight, trust me, especially by yourself when you're Emily and you're, that's not what you want to do. So just the idea of providing someone with additional supplies that they could have just in case. And so I did that. And then a couple more people at the embassy saw it, a lot of her friends, and they wanted the sort of same type of help. And it was like, hey, find a bag, put these loose types of things in your bag and just carry it with you wherever you go. And so, we were sitting in her one of her guest rooms at her house in Abidjan, and I was trying to figure out what to do next with my life. And we were there, and Emily said, "You should do the Go Ruck thing." And so, I don't think she knew what that meant, and she certainly didn't have the vision for what it's become. And I certainly didn't at that time either. But that was the sort of happy accident of, hey, I need something to do, and this could probably be it. And I don't do well when I have nothing going on. So I gotta do stuff. I like to move. I like to kind of, always have something in the fire. And this became that thing as I was transitioning. And so that's where it started.
What was, I think it's always helpful for veterans and people on active duty listening that aspire to entrepreneurship. What were those early days like? What was life like in that first year of, you've got, some courage, you've got an idea, you've got the support of your spouse? Like, what was that first year like?
So the fuller story is, it took almost 2.5 years to get the bag that became GR1 designed, right? And so I didn't know anything about manufacturing. So that's kind of a problem when you want to eventually go into manufacturing. And that I didn't know that I wanted to go into manufacturing even. So, I mean, like the circle is just a horrific thing of all of the kind of uncertainty and doubt and kind of, like, is this exactly what I want to be doing with my life? Starting to feel like you're Willy Loman peddling, shoes or something, right? And, making money's not cool. Serving America is. I mean, those are sort of stigmas that you have to face and deal with internally as well as externally, right? Because the last thing I ever wanted to do was to sort of dishonor the regiment of special forces, right? Mm. Like, I'd rather close the doors and just disappear than dishonor that regiment, right? Mm. And so, the first year was incremental. There weren't these huge sort of monumental decisions, but some of those decisions, they play themselves out over the course of a year or 2 years or 5 years or a decade. And you see how they kind of splintered out to be big back then, but you didn't know it at the time. Anyway, the first year was nothing. There was no bag. There was sort of trying to figure out who could help us design a bag, right? That's a monumental problem when you don't know anybody in manufacturing. When your network is Green Berets that are really good at unconventional warfare, they're not good at sewing and domestic manufacturing, right? Mm-hmm. So the problem was starting from ground zero and trying to build that up. And 2.5 years later, eventually, through a lot of happenstance and accidents, we end up and we have GR1 that's for sale.
I mean, I appreciate your candor on that. And I can relate. When I first started my company, Storybox, I felt like I was like a little kid wearing my dad's suit jacket and playing dress-up entrepreneur. And I was, you know, extremely frugal. But the one thing I spent money on was an office, because I'm like, I feel like such an imposter. I need some sort of sign that I'm not just wasting my life. And so I appreciate like your candor on that. And I'm wondering, you know, as you look back on those, that first, you know, year, 2.5 years of navigating the space, is there any way you could have avoided that? I just feel like it's like, I don't know any other way than just diving in and learning on your own. But I'm just thinking for people on active duty that are thinking of starting a company, is there anything they could be doing to speed up that process? Or is that just what comes with the territory?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it comes down to who you know. And sort of, by the way, it's kind of the same problem in war or in the army. There's this idea of, oh, there's a rank structure and you just make decisions and you tell people what to do, which is total BS, right? It's always comes down to personal relationships. Yep. You've got the leaders that you know that, you know, they tell you what to do and you have to do it because they outrank you. And then there's ones that inspire you. And so if you want to be an entrepreneur, you've got to figure out a way to inspire people. And that better start with your own network. And so, I mean, me personally, I don't know that frankly, I didn't even want to speed it up. I didn't really want to be doing this. It just kind of kept happening. Mm. So I wanted to go back to school. So eventually I did the GI Bill, right? And so I went back to business school at the same time as this was sort of incubating. And I used a lot of people at business school to help build out what GORUCK would become. So I got professors to sort of teach about GORUCK in small classes. And I got some of the students to help build out the sort of, you know, give their thoughts on how to start a new company. Of course, they weren't on the hook for any of the financial commitment that it takes to do it. But how do you speed it up? I mean, how do you not make mistakes? I mean, you can read, it's like asking, hey, if I just read a book on Lincoln, can I just become the leader that Lincoln was? And the short answer is no.
Yeah.
You've got to fail a lot. And Lincoln's life was full of, you know, failures and rejections and all of those things, personal, professional, whatever, right? And that's the way that you learn. If you're not willing to get out there, then you're never going to succeed. So ultimately, you got to get out there. Like, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you have to sell. The problem with selling is that it's not that cool, right? And I don't like it. I don't like the feeling of selling. I don't like, you know, even when I love and believe in our stuff, and I do, I don't want to feel like I'm selling something to someone. It's just, it's not cool. I mean, yeah. Being in special forces, serving America, that's cool. You know, selling stuff, making money, all that stuff. I mean, these are the stigmas that you deal with as a veteran entrepreneur.
Mm. And so while you're at, you know, I think the thing that just jumps out to me though is, it seems like the fact that you had the perseverance and determination to keep showing up, to keep, you know, keep at it and not give up despite self-doubt and just wondering if this is the right direction. I have to think that that's been a big component of that, at least in the initial phase of that success, that you were willing to stick with it when 99.9% of people probably would have walked away before they got to that first product.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that true with everything in life, though?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a life of attrition.
Yeah.
And if you're really dedicated to something, and ultimately, you know, it just became, yeah, I got to spend $5,000 for this and $10,000 for this and $2,000 for this and $200 for this. And I just kept sort of slowly doubling down.
Yeah.
And I guess it's not, I guess, let me rephrase that, because I guess it's not doubling down if it's, you know, 200 and you've already got tens of thousands in. But just before I woke up one day, I was like, man, I've spent a lot of money on this, right? And, you know, I guess subconsciously, and I don't want to sort of turn into Freud or something stupid like that, but subconsciously, I sort of really believed in this project. And that ultimately, it's not what you say in life, it's what you do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the doing does turn into show me your calendar and show me your bank account. That's what you do in life, right? Mm-hmm. What you say is not that important. And so, you know, oh, you know, you love your kids. Well, how much time do you spend with them? Mm-hmm. Right. And I have to remind myself this all the time, right? Like it's precious. It's sacred time. So in the mornings when I've got an extra hour, and this is now. Back then, I didn't have kids, thankfully, because GoRuck would not exist if I would have had a sort of a family and a life back then. But now I'm sort of like, you know, I've got kids in the morning, and sometimes, you know, the extra half hour in the morning, and getting home before they're asleep and spending that hour or something with them, that it's really important, and I really love it, you know, but. Back then, it was like a 24-hour ball crusher. It was just all the time, nonstop. Mm.
And I love the thought of you when you were at Georgetown getting your MBA from the McDonough School of Business. I love this thought of you using this in class and using your classmates and your professors. And I imagine that really accelerates things with the company. So what happens when you graduate then? Like, where is the company at back in, I guess, 2011 when you leave Georgetown? What happens from there?
So we're still in DC, and I didn't have an office, right? I had other ways to try to pretend like I was a grown-up company, but one of them was not an office. So I had a little condo in Georgetown, right by Rose Park at 26 and P. It's my favorite part of town. I love it, right? And before you know it, I've got like 7 people working in the sort of, you know, studio that's above. And there's two bedrooms downstairs, and I slept in one of them, and then, you know, one of our other employees was sleeping in the other, right? It was, you know, it was kind of crazy. And, you know, you show up, and I walk upstairs and turn the coffee machine on. And, oh, by the way, I've been up since, you know, I was up till 3 or 4 in the morning on Facebook or working on new ConOps or doing whatever stuff most of the night. And then I wake up and whatever time, so, you know, the other people working here start showing up, and they've got to sort of enter a gate that's supposed to be sort of a private kind of, you know, community there or whatever, right? It's all sort of string and duct tape of sorts as far as offices go. And we're just sort of, you know, making it happen out of this space. And I'm like, man, you know, we're probably doing a couple, I'd have to go back and look. It's sort of a blur now, but $2 million in revenue a year. That's pretty good by then. Right. I mean, as I think about it now, it's like, that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, our first year, 2010, we did $55,000 in revenue. And, you know, now, fast forward to 2017, right? Mm. It's like, you know, that's a 2 average days. Wow. Right? Combine the 2 average days. And so, but it takes a lot, right? You can skip to the end and say, oh, that's awesome. I want to go do that. It's like saying, I want to go be Rambo, right? Like it takes you I just want to be Jason Bourne. Can you teach me how to do it in a weekend? It's like, no. It's not possible. It takes a lot of time. And so after Georgetown, we're there and there's 7 or 8 of us working out of the top floor. It's like, we got to go get a real office. So this is to your earlier point about, you know, an office all grown up and stuff. And, you know, it's like DC is a really expensive place. There's really, really bad taxes and the real estate's really expensive. So one of the hardest decisions that I made is, look, we were zero involved in the politics of DC or anything like that. I just love DC because it's our nation's capital. It's capital of freedom. And every time I go outside there, I'm just inspired by our history. And so it was a really hard decision to leave DC, but we eventually went back to Jacksonville Beach, Florida, where I grew up in the area here. And so, you know, then it's, it's almost like starting over, because basically, you know, I think one or two people came down here with us, and some people worked remotely for a while, but ultimately there's nobody here now that was up there then. So it's kind of like we had to start over. And that's hard, by the way, because you become friends with the people, and I'm still friends with them. And I really love and miss the people that, especially in the early days, you know, took a chance on me and on the vision that GORUCK had.
And one thing I'm wondering, as I think of like I put myself in the shoes of someone on active duty listening, is how did you fund all of this when you know, in those first couple of years where you're developing the product and you're doing all of this? Was that from like savings from the military, or was it kind of like living off your wife's salary, or how did you make that possible? Or maybe put it differently, how would you recommend that they finance this sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to have a savings. You have to have savings. And so for me, I mean, so Em and I, and by the way, let me remind me in case I forget your original question, but Emily and I have a sort of a crazy story. We were together and then we got divorced and then we got back together. So we're back together now. We have, you know, a couple kids. She works at GORUCK. She runs HR and a lot of strategic partnerships. And it's really a crazy story. I mean, that girl is just the love of my life, and I light up every time I think about her, right? But, you know, at the time when we were married, it was, you know, yes, she was on a salary. She was deployed, if you will. And I had a salary, and I'm getting deployment pay while I'm in Iraq, and I'm living with my great aunt and great uncle in Colorado Springs. So I'm not paying for rent. And she's not paying for rent because she's on, you know, she's in government housing in West Africa. Ultimately, the advice is figure out a way to cut out all of your overhead, or as much as you possibly can, and save as much money as you can. Because here's the thing, whatever money you have, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And in business, mistakes cost money. And so you're going to have some safety nets. To where, if you're stressing over $50, you've got problems, right? If you really want to start a business, so you have to sort of plan, right? The military teaches us this. This isn't impossible. We can do it, right? But planning for money stuff is not what the military teaches us. So we've got to sort of take the skills that we have and apply them a little bit differently, and say, hey, this is something I want to do. I need to start to figure out how to plan for it. And it just involves being as frugal as you can and saving up as much money as you can. So, you know, I would say basically I'll ballpark it and say early days was about $100,000. That went into GORUCK. And that was deployment pays and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, sleeping on my great aunt and uncle's couch and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, just saving up money and being smart about it. And that's sort of what created the little bit of a, you know, for me, that was a lot of money. But, you know, so then fast forward, and as GORUCK finally in 2010 got to the point where we needed to finance some inventory, you know, I had to go to my stepdad and ask if he would invest in GORUCK. Right, which was a really hard conversation to have, at least for me. It probably wasn't as hard for him, but for me, it's really hard to ask someone for money, right? But I don't know, no strangers are probably going to take the chance on me, but the people that you love might, right? And so, you know, he was gracious. He gave me $150,000. It funded a lot of our initial inventory, or all of our initial inventory. And, you know, he told me later that he was pretty sure he was going to completely lose his money, but he was willing to support his son. And so it's kind of a neat story, at least for me. And, you know, I mean, you're going to have to figure out a way to get money. That ultimately it's the dirty little secret of business. And it's really hard for veterans to hear, but money it's like oxygen in business. And you've got to sort of accept that. The acceptance of that was very difficult for me.
And maybe, you know, fast forward to today, how would you describe the company now, where you're at, and kind of where you're headed?
So we're out of survival mode, which is a great place to be. I mean, survival mode was very difficult and taxing in the kinds of ways that you look back years later and you're really glad to not be in survival. It's sort of raw, you know, and the best analogy I have is sort of you're a young band or something and you came up with this great record that you recorded in your buddy's garage recording studio, right? And you got the record out there and then you toured on the record and you just pounded your heart into it every single night. But oh, by the way, you toured for like 3 years straight and you missed, you know, one night a week or something like that. And you can't sustain it. And so, you know, where we are now is, I mean, we'll do about $15 million this year in 2017, which is, it's okay. I mean, it's great. It's great, all things considered. But I mean, I'm not really satisfied with where we are, frankly. I just think we have a huge opportunity. And to go back to an earlier point, you kind of in business have to measure it by growth. And growth turns down to one number, which is revenue or profits, right? But you've got to sort of grow as a company because if you're not growing, you're dying. So where we want to go is sort of, I mean, I think GoRuck has the DNA to be a billion-dollar company. And I can sort of walk you through what that looks like. Is in 1967, Bill Bowerman wrote a book called Jogging. And that's what sort of brought about the jogging and then the running revolution that fueled Nike, because he was one of the co-founders of Nike. And so we've seen these various fitness revolutions throughout the decades, you know, jogging and yoga and, you know, step aerobics in the 80s, which was, you know, the Reebok sort of craze, right? And you say, can we do that for rucking, which is, veterans know this better than most, but you put some weight on your back and you go for a walk. It's called rucking, right? Now, the first thing veterans will say is, oh, yeah, but that sucks, right? Be like, yeah, it sure does when you've got 100 pounds on your back and you sleep, you know, 30 minutes a day and you get no food and you got to dig fighting positions at 4 a.m. only to get blown out of your fighting position to move to some other, right? Got it, right? But we're talking about a form of fitness that has a lot of scalability and has a lot of applicability to especially an American population. And so right now we're heavily invested in the brand of GoRuck as it leverages our past in special forces and sort of the special forces way of life. And so, you know, we build gear and rucksacks and we have a line of apparel and we have a line of events that are all rucking events. And between all of that, you're sort of looking at, there's a lot of scalability in that model, especially if you ignite a fitness revolution called rucking.
And you guys, I mean, you're not even just about the equipment anymore. I mean, there's so much that are about events and it's really expanded. When did that kind of evolve? Because I imagine you started just completely focused on gear. And then when did that transition to doing gear and events and community building and all these other aspects?
Yeah, so that happened fast. And it was sort of a survival tactic on my part. So May of 2010, we had the rucks and they were for sale. And the problem was that we make them in America and they're really expensive and they're really valuable. I mean, they're really high quality. And yet nobody wanted to buy them because we didn't have a brand. And when you charge $295 for a backpack, that's tough, right? I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that were listening so far. They're sitting in their car or wherever. They're like, oh, this sounds like a nice, interesting place. Maybe I'll go check out goruck.com when I get to work. And then I just told them that the bag cost $295 and they're like, oh, I'm definitely not buying that, right? I've been hearing that since forever. Got it, right? So rewind to 2010 when I've got all of every dollar that I ever earned. I've got every dollar that Emily earned that was mine before we're going through our divorce, sorry. And then I've got all of my stepdad's money that he invested in me so that I wouldn't fail and just default on whatever, you know, his ownership or equity, whatever. And so I've got a lot of pressure to not fail. And you know, that was that was sort of a lot of pressure. And so I had to figure out how to get out of only owning inventory. And I don't know anything about sort of Facebook ads or Google ads or anything, but I was in Special Forces. So I know a lot about unconventional warfare, and I know a lot about how to build teams, and I know a lot about how to train them to be the best versions of themselves. That's the core mission of Special Forces. And so the Go Ruck Challenge was created, and the first one was September 25th, 2010. So only a few months after the bags were actually for sale. And that was sort of the ignition. For us, it sort of got the brand out there and became the sort of blue ocean strategy or the differentiator, if you will, that led us, that people were talking about us, because awareness is king. If you can say, hey, I'm going to start a new business and I'm going to get 10 million website hits on day one, you're going to be successful. That's, by the way, we've never gotten anything close to that. So it's sort of like, can you get 10,000? Can you get 100? I mean, hits equals sales. It's just a rule that we have here. Hits equals sales. More hits equals more sales.
And I guess as you look back on the last, you know, 10 years, decade of this journey, is there like a moment that stands out as kind of like the low point or the hardest point in just kind of growing this incredible company?
So... yeah, but it's got nothing really to do with the business. And I think that's sort of true with running a business, is it's always a personal thing. So yeah. In 2013, my dog died, and that was just sort of traumatic, you know? I mean, we're kind of 3 years-ish in to the business, and he was kind of, you know, the anchor in my life after getting out of the military and, you know, going through a divorce. And I got the dog, by the way, right? She gave me the dog, I should say, but I got the dog. And so I was like a bad country song. It was, you know, a man and his dog and all of his sorrows and stuff. And, oh yeah, I had this kind of business that I didn't really care that much about in the early days. And I kind of wanted to try to figure it out though, cause I don't like to fail at things. And so, you know, 2013, you know, Java was who sort of got me out, right? I mean, hey, I needed to go for a walk. And so I take Java for a walk. Well, over time, he wants more. And I'm all of a sudden slowly going with him on more walks. And, oh, by the way, I might as well just put a ruck on and I'll get a little bit more out of it. And so 20, 30 pounds, whatever. And I start almost training a little bit for what, I'm not sure, but I'm kind of getting out there a little bit more. And so, you know, when he passed away, he got autoimmune disease. It was just sort of diagnosis by exclusion, which is, it's really difficult, right? So they don't know what's wrong with him. So they have to sort of test against all these different things to figure out what is wrong with him. And, you know, I just watched him die in a hospital room in Northern Virginia in 2013. And that was really, really hard. And so, you know, I think it's not the business setbacks are pretty straightforward. You know, I mean, it's dollars and cents. It's a partnership that doesn't work out. It's sort of someone promised you something and didn't deliver. And, you know, there's sort of unmet expectations or like fill in the blank, all sorts of excuses about why people could fail or whatever. It's like, oh, someone said they were going to, you know, you got your hopes up and someone hinted they might maybe do something for you. And you banked everything on that, and oh, guess what? It didn't happen, right? That's kind of what a lot of the early days are with a lot of things. And that stuff, it comes and it goes. It's like, poof, gone. But it always comes back to you. It always comes back to the team that you have. And if you're in charge, then you're the anchor of that team. And so, you know, that personally was really difficult. It was also as we were moving from DC to Florida, and there was just a lot of complications. So the low point was when Java died.
And are there any resources that have been helpful for you in the last year? I don't know if it's like a particular book or podcast or programs or anything that's kind of helped you better run and grow your business that you would recommend for veteran listeners?
So I'll probably approach this a little bit differently and say, I think that the best thing you can do is stay true to the things that you love in life, right? I mean, I get a lot of value and knowledge out of continuing to read books that are relevant to me personally, but that have nothing to do with GoRuck, right? So if you get too linear down a linear path, if you want to read every leadership book known to man in the hopes that that's going to make you Abe Lincoln, it's not going to happen, mm-hmm. right? And sort of in the same way that listening to everything that somebody else has to say about their journey to creating a business, it's also not going to – it might be entertaining, and I hope at least in this small little corner of our universe that this is entertaining. But, you know, I didn't really read any books on how to start a business. I didn't do any of that stuff, right? And so when I get the question about what sort of resources can someone, you know, go after or find that will help them? I mean, yes, I went to business school. I frankly, for a couple years, I thought business school was more harm than good, right? Because it teaches you strategic things, but not tactical things. And so in the early days, it's all tactical. It's just sort of, are you willing to figure out how to work WordPress? Are you willing to figure out, you know, like, I don't know anything about accounting or taxes or e-commerce or any of that stuff. I don't know any of it, right? And so what I did find to be rewarding at those times was to do the things in life that I enjoyed. And so, you know, taking Java out through Rock Creek in DC was hugely enjoyable. You know, reading completely unrelated books to GoRuck was really enjoyable. You know, anything from, I mean, yeah, I read the Steve Jobs book. That's a good one, right? I mean, but if you try to emulate Steve Jobs' leadership style, oh yeah, by the way, he was a complete and utter asshole. You know, and so if you try to emulate someone else's leadership style, it's not going to work because you are you. And so the best thing that you can do is read a bunch of books, sure, listen to a bunch of podcasts, listen to other people's experiences, but not get tunnel vision about it. You've got to be yourself. That's ultimately what everything boils down to in this, because if you're not yourself, the people around you, they won't follow you. They won't be inspired by you. If you are yourself and you have a strong vision and you pursue it, then you've got a fighting chance.
I love that. I mean, it sounds like, you know, one thing I take away from that, it's like when you're in a good spot, the company does well. And it's like, that's what Java was for you, is like this release. And when you're reading these books and staying active and staying, you know, happy, that's going to benefit the company more than just kind of poring over business books all the time. And maybe, you know, devoting every second to that, of just making sure that you're, like you said, true to yourself and also doing things that you're passionate about.
Yeah, that's all fair. I mean, look, frankly, I don't know much about, I don't know much about finance. I don't know much about operations. I don't know much about classical marketing. You pick any of the various sectors at any business, And if you plug me into somewhere and say, hey, you're responsible for this little corner of it, I'm not qualified for that, right? I've got some experience now because I've just failed so many times here and figured out a way, though, to do something special. And at GoRuck, it always turned into, we can just go straight to the people. And that's been, like, the people that have supported GoRuck, I mean, I'm friends with so many of them, and they're just great. You know, there was a time when half of them had slept on the floor at my house, right? And that's, you know, that's kind of how it has to be if you're going to do it like this. If you want to go out and raise a bunch of money and do that kind of route, you're going to spend a year or more trying to figure that out. And I would not recommend that as a transitional kind of process. So for me, I kind of needed to learn the ropes. I needed to learn them slowly, and I needed every dollar to count. And that's why we sort of are where we are, and we've got a really strong foundation. And so, yeah, get out and do the stuff that you like. And if listening to podcasts like this one is entertaining and fun and you get something out of it, then great. But you can't just listen to podcasts your whole life and hope that's going to make you into something. You got to get out there and make decisions, right? If, you know, you find every book that you can find on accounting and finance and all these things, which, by the way, put me to sleep and I just stopped reading them, then you sort of say, I mean, I really remember going to Books a Million in DuPont Circle. I think it might have shut down, but I don't know. In Washington, D.C., trying to figure out how to pass this accounting test that I had. It's like the textbooks weren't doing – I bought Accounting for Dummies or something. And, you know, I mean, that's my level of accounting that I know is Accounting for Dummies-ish, you know? And so there's always a way to overcome your weaknesses. Just make sure that your weaknesses aren't what kills you. And listening to other people's stories, I do it all the time. So I really enjoy it. You know, we've got some people on our board, and we've got some people now that work here who have just really awesome stories. And I want to hear their stories, the successes, the failures, all of that stuff. Because if you think you're immune to the kinds of failures that they've had or the successes that they've had, frankly, then, you know, you're wrong. Nobody's a super special snowflake. You've got to sort of get out there and learn on your own. There's no shortcuts.
Such great advice. And one thing I'm taking away is, you know, the importance of that tactics and execution and ability to roll up one's sleeves and break through walls. And I think that veterans are so well suited for that. I'm thinking back, and I echo your statements where, like, business school is so strategy when all you need in those early stages are tactics. How might someone think about whether or not to pursue business school? Like, do you have any advice on, you know, how to consider whether that's worth it for entrepreneurship or if it's better just to dive straight in?
So I've got three pieces of advice. The first is, use the GI Bill for transitioning veterans. Use the GI Bill. Get a dog if you don't have one already, and work your ass off. The answers will come. The answers, as they're wont to do, the answers will come. And I feel like a lot of people out there, you know, my hope is that there's a lot of people out there who want to do a lot of awesome stuff with their life. They just kind of, you know, a lot of us don't have it figured out exactly at certain phases of our life. And entrepreneurship is not the only route. There's lots of ways that you can be really happy and satisfied in your life. And you know, a lot of us veterans, we're really good as members of teams. And so if you want to start your own company, I would say, first off, come up with 1,000 different reasons why you should not do it, why it will fail. And if you then say, I still want to do this because you've got such a specific vision and you've got such a specific sort of desire, then okay, you've got a fighting chance. But if what you're really getting after is you want to be part of a team, you want to feel valuable, you want to be part of a community, entrepreneurship is not that for a really long time. And it's really lonely. And if that's kind of not what you want, then probably don't pursue that. You know, there's lots of ways. If it should work out, then it will work out. And if you attach yourself to an organization that you love, support, all of that kind of stuff, and you work your ass off to one of the three things that you need to do, then you're going to really set yourself up for success. Because success is not measured in terms of, oh, you know, I started a company and it does this much in revenue. I don't really care about that stuff, right? I wake up in the morning, I feel really good, right? I sleep well at night because I feel like we're making a difference. But there's lots of places where I felt like that. In Special Forces, in the Army, I also felt like that. I woke up really great in the morning. Like, it's time to go to train. Yeah, when you wake up at 5, it can kind of get a little rough, right? You get your coffee a little earlier and all that stuff, and you end up going to bed a little bit earlier, but you feel really good about what you're doing in the world. Mm-hmm. And so the transition from that to entrepreneurship, there's a lot of loneliness in between it. And, you know, I think it would be remiss of me not to say that you really have to examine if that's what you want. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then go after it. But if you plan, as we're also wont to do in the military, then you got to figure out if you can do it yet and what you're going to do. And are you really passionate about it? Because if you really don't want to do it, it's not going to work out.
This is great. I mean, I just love the honest and raw presentation of this view on entrepreneurship. I think it's so spot on, and it's refreshing to hear someone willing to just talk about it so candidly. And I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is, you know, I've asked so many questions trying to cover what I thought our listeners would like, but I'm sure there's things I haven't asked about that you'd love to share. And so I'd love just to turn it over for any final words of wisdom that you'd like to share with people who are on active duty or veterans listening to the show.
Yeah, so, I mean, our main goal at GORUCK is just to honor our roots. And, you know, it really means a lot to us that people are still out serving, that there's still this thing called America that we believe in, that we're willing to sacrifice for. And so, you know, I think it's an amazing education that we're all given, those who chose to serve. And there's a lot of ways to serve, by the way. The military is a great one. You know, there's fire, law enforcement, teachers, all that kind of stuff. But when it boils down to it, it's those to whom much is given, much is expected. And, you know, America wants to say thank you for your service, and those who served, that doesn't ring as true. What we want is we want to put our bodies, we want to put our minds to good use. And so I would say to everyone out serving and who wants to serve and whomever else is listening, is that those to whom much is given, much is expected. And that was the top quote of the first counseling statement I got when I showed up at 10th Special Forces Group. And it's really stuck with me. And so whatever you do with your life, whether it's in service to America every day wearing the uniform, and God bless you and thank you for your service, I'll say it, right? But, you know, when you get out, right, like it can be a little different. And it is, but it's not that much different if you don't make it that much different, right? You can still pour your heart and soul into something. You can still give more than you expect to get back, right? And so if you keep a positive attitude, you can basically do anything you want in this world. Your military members are overqualified for every job that they'll get, at least from a interpersonal level. There's a lot of work that you have to put into the tactical level of, I'm going to learn this skill or that skill, but what else is new? You get sent to a school or whatever. You learn pretty quickly that if you Google some skill, you can figure it out, right? Just take the same mindset that you had in the military and apply it to the civilian sector. And, you know, I mean, I really believe that America's best days are in front of us. And I think that those who have served in the military are serving in the military, and those who will continue to serve in the military are the reason why, and or at the tip of the spear of the reason why. And we just have to apply what we've learned in the military and then transition that to whatever else is next.
This is great, Jason. I really appreciate your time and advice on this. And for listeners, you can find more at goruck.com. You'll see Jason's website, the products he offers, the events he organizes. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with listeners today.
Thanks so much for having me. God bless.
Service, service, service.
All right. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed Jason's story. More information in the show notes at beyonduniform.io. If you haven't already, sign up for our newsletter. Lots of great information that comes out every other week from that. And also, if you haven't had a chance to give us a great review on iTunes, I would greatly appreciate it. It helps us get the word out about the show. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll be back next week with more interviews with veterans about their civilian career.